Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, hello. Hello there, sir. How
hello.
Are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you? You all right?
I'm good. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. The weather has changed. Winter has arrived. It's definitely cold.
What's the temperature?
I don't know what it is.
Is it below freezing?
I mean, we're in Vancouver.
Okay.
And BC, which is a little more mild than the rest of Canada, for sure.
That's true.
I don't know. I'd say it's probably in the 40s or 50s here.
Okay.
You know, but pretty consistently, it's like coat weather, gloves outside.
Calgary's at 33 degrees right now.
Oh, yeah.
So we're lower than you. Yeah.
Colder.
Colder for me, but not so bad for you. The more temperate climate of Vancouver.
But, you know, I'm excited about this time of year because you feel the holidays coming and there is that, you know, really important holiday tradition of the Delta Flyers Christmas episode.
Oh my gosh. Do you remember how nervous I was about that?
Yes, I do.
I remember here I am. I'm texting Robbie. I'm like, I don't think I can do this, man. He's like, we'll be fine. He's texting me back. I'm like, I don't know. I'm really nervous. What if we can't think of anything? What if we, and it was absolutely fine. He was right. But I was so nervous. I was like,
you were.
No.
You wanted to plan it all out. I'm like,
I did. I was like,
let's just see where we go. It's going to be fun.
I know. Here I am trying to make this a official planned out meeting. We need bullet points. We need to have a structure. We need outline. We need to sketch all that. Your Robbie's like, nah, we're just going to wing it.
It's going to be funny.
It'll be great. I'm like, no. I was.
It's a very important holiday tradition now.
It is.
Yes.
I can't wait to hear it. Yeah, it should be fun.
We'll see what happens. It's going to be fun. It's always fun.
All right.
What's this week's episode?
This week is Hunters.
Hunters.
Yes. Hunters. I'm so excited about this
episode.
All right. So why don't we go watch this and we will come right back and discuss, recap, and talk about everything that we remembered about this episode. Hey, everybody. Robbie and I are back from watching Hunters.
Hunters.
Yes, collecting relics.
Yes,
they collect relics.
Hey, here's a question.
Such a creepy.
It is. We know that Tiny Ron is the main Alpha Hirogen here, but yet I didn't see opening credits and I didn't see end credits. You're saying definitely there should be some end credits there, right? We had this discussion for a second before we started.
This is like a SAG union rule. You can't have an actor delivering lines. And
can I ask you this? Could it be because they're wearing the masks?
Yeah.
It is somebody else's voice.
Yes. That's absolutely possible. Okay, I thought of that
because
too.
Because when I jumped into the IMDb, Tony Todd's name was on this episode. And I thought, okay, well, that makes sense. Tony Todd has that very low resident voice. You know, his voice is so low. Maybe he did the voiceover for Tiny Ron's character. So therefore, Tiny Ron's name was not in the beginning of the episode.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah, maybe they didn't know how big or small these Hirogen were going to turn out to be. And so they just thought, oh, we can cast somebody who just wears a suit and then we'll loop in somebody else acting. Maybe.
That's what I'm thinking. Because
that's a smart idea.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's pay a little bit of tribute to Tiny Ron, who passed away November 28th, 2019, at the age of 72 in Santa Clarita, California. He passed away. Ronald Taylor was his birth name. And this is interesting enough. When Taylor applied to the Screen Actors Guild, he learned that the name Ron Taylor was already in use by another actor. And so his acting teacher suggested that he use Tiny Ron, figuring that in a niche category populated by actors with such screen names as Andre the Giant, the name Tiny Ron would stand out. which it does. I mean, you can't forget Tiny Ron for a 7 foot tall actor slash stuntman slash performer, right? Same thing with the other guest star who played the Beta Herojin. The Beta Herojin was played by Roger Morrissey, also equally tall. I'm guessing he was probably 6'10 or 6'11, maybe an inch or two shorter than Tiny was. Morrissey is also credited as a stuntman and an actor. And I guess Tiny Ron's name on this is Alpha Herojin Idrin, I-D-R-I-N.
Yeah, I did a little research on that too. I just called it Herojin 1 and Herojin 2 as I was watching it. I didn't ever hear them use a name, but when I did a little looking into the episode after we watched it, I saw that Idrin. Maybe he comes back or gets named later, and maybe there's some story.
Do you think it's possible that you can come back from a black hole, though?
Exactly. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's in a flashback or something like that, or maybe they talk about him.
It's possible.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because I do remember him. I thought he was on the set more than once.
I did too. That's what I'm saying.
It's very possible.
You're absolutely right. Because of that, the mouth being covered.
Yeah.
You could. And these aliens dress alike, look very similar. Mm-hmm. Tiny Ron could end up playing a bunch of different characters. And this one, maybe we refer to as Idrin, but Tiny Ron could maybe play a bunch and just revoice them with different voiceovers.
Yeah, I'm going to call it the Vader effect, as in the Darth Vader effect, because David Prowse played the physical manifestation of Darth Vader. He wore the helmet, the cape, but we all know that voice is James Earl Jones and not David Prowse. So it's very possible that,
exactly.
Tiny didn't do his own voice, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. I want to say that I never saw what Tiny Ron looked like while we were filming. I recall at the end of a day, I saw him and I said, Tiny, you get here before I do and you leave well after the time that I leave. So I never get to see what you really look like under all that armor and prosthetics, I have no clue. And he looks at me, he says, I'm a 5'2" black man underneath all this is what he said to me. He said that to me. And I said, that is pretty funny, actually, because we have no clue what he looks like underneath. Let's start this thing off with our poetry synopsis. Here you go. Here's my haiku for Hunters. Message from Starfleet. Herojin take away team. Black hole saves the day. There you go.
I love the haiku. Sweet. There's just a beauty to its simplicity.
It is so simple. It makes me happy. All right, let's hear your complex limerick. Here we go.
Complex limerick goes a little something like this.
Yes.
Silver paint on the face means something bad. Letters from home make the crew really sad. Good and bad news. Waiting gives Harry the blues. Janeway got dumped, but Chakotay's not mad.
I'm sorry. Bam, I try to stay silent through the entire thing, but I kept doing making weird fart sounds, but I was repressing my laughter.
Your laughter. I saw you. I could see you.
All the zzzz was being pushed down so that you couldn't. All right. Oh, good job. Good job.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Robbie/Rebecca.
The old limerick times.
Yes.
All right. So this was an episode written by Jerry Taylor.
Yes.
Which I did not remember.
I don't remember that either.
If someone had asked me before we did this rewatch and recap, when did Michael Piller and Jerry Taylor leave the show? I would have said Michael Piller left in season 2 at some point and Jerry Taylor left in season 3. Wow. And I felt like they were both gone and they both stuck around much longer than I remember.
Okay.
But Jerry Taylor deep into season 4 surprises me. Yeah. David Livingston directed this episode.
Yeah.
Which, David did some of our best episodes. I have to admit, he really did. He fit the genre and the franchise of Star Trek at this point in time. His tastes and his instincts were really dead on. Like he shot some beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to start this recap?
Here we go. So the episode opened with some very cool space shots, I have to say. I love the shots. Like
beautiful.
Yeah, they leveled up here in terms of the production value, some beautiful space shots. And we hear this sort of garbled message over the space shots. We can't really make any sense of it. It's bits and pieces of words, maybe, hard to tell.
Yeah.
And we go on the bridge and everyone's listening to this.
Yeah.
And Harry says, I'm going to try to reprocess this. And it turns out these messages are from Starfleet Command.
Right.
Harry reprocesses these back together and can only get a little piece of basically them saying, you know, this is Starfleet Command. We're going to send you some information. It's very important. And that's all you kind
of hear. It cuts off. It's not a complete message, right? Mm-hmm. We realize that the rest of the message is stuck in the relay station, which is Hirogen owned. And we already know that. But this is still something that Janeway's like, look, we can't not go check this out. We need to download, or we need to be able to access the rest of this information. We need to know. This could be an important message from Starfleet in telling us how to get back home, maybe, or who knows, right? Mm-hmm. So that is what drives this episode, that we need to get the rest of this information.
Yeah. And then we go over to this Hirogen ship, we realize, but the shot starts on these skulls and bones and things. And we reveal we're on a Hirogen ship. There's a couple Hirogens. This is where we first see Tiny Ron again and his buddy. And he says they pick up Voyager's presence. And he says, let's intercept this ship.
Yeah. Well, they pick up the message. They ask, where's that message from? And then Beta Hirogen says, far away from another part of the galaxy. Okay, so then where is it being sent to? A ship that's approaching one of our relay stations, and that's when the intercept course happens, right?
That's when the intercept course happens. And it puts the paint on.
Like that to me was very reminiscent of indigenous cultures when they put on war paint before they go to war. But clearly this is something that they do before they track prey, right?
Yeah.
Before they go on a hunt, as it was. And really, it was, you know, the first time we get to see what these guys are close up, because the last time we saw a very staticky transmission of the Hirogen.
Just on the view screen.
Just on the view screen. It's very small. And then he gets zapped by the feedback loop, whatever, that Seven sends through the relay and shocks him, right? Clearly, he's still alive, because I'm assuming that was Tiny then, right? In that tiny screen. Yep. And then now this is Tiny close up. So now we get to see the detail in the armor and also the alien full face makeup, you know, that was going on. I mean, it just, to me, one of the most impressive makeups and alien wardrobe so far.
Well, it was a real collaboration between the makeup department and the costume department.
Yes.
Because all of the suit would have to be sculpted as well. That's not you could manufacture. So they would have to collaborate between makeup and costumes on that design. I thought it was, super.
And
super
clearly cool. It had to have been made from scratch, because, you know, 7 foot tall actors are not, it's difficult to find stuff in the wardrobe department that's going to fit these guys.
Can't just go out and buy a Hirogen outfit.
No.
Have you ever seen a Hirogen? Have you ever seen anyone do cosplay of a Hirogen at a convention?
Yes.
You have?
I have.
Oh, that's cool. I would love to see that.
Yeah, but not often. It's rare.
No, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one to do.
That would be a super tough one. I would love to see that. Mm-hmm. If anybody out there knows someone that's cosplayed the Hirogen, send a photo to our Facebook page or to our
Twitter Instagram,
whatever. I would love to see someone cosplaying a Hirogen.
Ditto.
That would be super cool. So we go to the bridge next. Harry is very optimistic at this point.
He is.
Everybody he's else so is kind of skeptical, but he's like, I believe this is going to happen.
Oh, he's glasses half full all the way this entire time. And then Janeway pats his hand at the very end, you know, a little pat.
Very sweet.
Yeah, sweet.
I noticed in this whole scene that David Livingston did something he did not often do, and that was shoot the shots that he lined up on very long lenses with a lot of heavy foreground railings and things sort of obscuring the frame. And David was known for his wide lenses real close. He'd put a fisheye lens up by your face. So for him to be shooting the bridge that way, I thought, wow, that's a real experiment for him.
It is.
And I like it. It was very cinematic. It reminded me of like a more modern Trek show, like Discovery or Picard or something. Those kind of compositions of a shot where you've got foreground, you know, obscuring things, and you feel this kind of tension of the foreground and the background. I thought it was really great for him to start mixing up his techniques there. So
yeah, definitely creative and very effective. It did sort of add to the tension, his selection of shots there. And you're right, very atypical of your standard fisheye lens, wide angle lens that he always uses. Yeah. He didn't do
he
it.
He still had some way. Wide lenses. Like you've got a shot of Harry by the console and Chakotay and Janeway later on, when you're working on the back console, and it's a big wide lens up on your face and you see the whole bridge. Yes. And I was like, that was a weird shot.
You got one too when you were at the con about your message from home, right? It was right on your face. You could see the pores in your skin practically. It was right on there. You could see everything. Okay. So now we are in Astrometrics.
Yeah.
And the doctor is scolding Seven. And you notice that one over the shoulder shot where Bob is literally right on top. Again, very close in proximity.
Close standing.
Yeah, close standing acting again, right behind Seven. Yep. And the doctor starts having this inner monologue, which he's talking about
He's bragging about all the risks.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, when we get back, I'm going to be hailed as a hero. And I risked my life. And I love how, you know, Seven. He thinks he's going to be a hero. And Seven's like, yeah, when you get back, you'll probably just be your program will be erased and they'll update it.
she's literally the reality check is what she is.
Totally goes, the reality.
Nah, your program is going to be deleted and upgraded. You won't they won't even know who you are.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the ship starts going through some shakes and shudders, and we flash back to the bridge. Gravimetric forces are being felt from the relay station, which is kind of crazy because it's 2 light years away. So it's like, wait a minute, how are we feeling this? And it's just, you know, it's just a little bizarre. They're not sure what's going on. We also detect a vessel and it's kind of just drifting in space, and sensors pick up one deceased humanoid on that ship, which is consequently beamed over to sick bay. And that's the next scene. We're in sick bay.
Mm-hmm. And we see the skin suit.
Yeah,
we see
it,
this.
It looks like a Halloween. Yeah, just stick that thing right on. Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure makeup made it out of some rubber foam or whatever. Yeah. The doctor says they performed a complete osteotomy. This alien has been gutted. Ugh, it's just disgusting. And and Seven says that the Borg have seen these aliens, seen this situation before.
Yes, they've seen this osteotomy performed before on other aliens. Right. Mm-hmm.
And she says a species number. She says, yes, it's because of species 51, blah, 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 whatever. And then I think someone says, Janeway says, you know, can you tell us about it? And she says, no, we didn't. It was irrelevant. Like we don't know anything. So it's kind of a dead end with Seven. Like she knows about Hirogen sort of maybe, but not no details, but they're around the Borg have seen them around.
Yeah.
And Janeway wants to return the body to the ship. She's got a lot of respect for this crewman. Who was
not really a body though. How, would you call it a body at this point? The skin suit. Yeah. She should have said, doctor, return the skin.
Yeah.
To the ship.
It's pretty gross.
Ship. Return the skin gross, to that. A ship. It's just skin. That's it. There's nothing left. Nothing left. It is gross. Okay. Now we're on the bridge and we see the relay station on long range sensors. Harry realizes that this relay station is 100,000 years old, not 100, but 100,000 years old, which it's just crazy.
What's crazy to me about that though, is that, so if this is the Hirogen's relay station and they created this 100,000 years ago with technology, that means for 100,000 years, these sort of primitive behaviors of war paint and hunting and osteotomies, like they're a pretty deeply primitive culture in a lot of ways too. They've held on, they've advanced technology in many ways, but a lot of sort of primitive behaviors are still held on to. I mean, the paint on the face does nothing except symbolic or spiritual or religious. It mm-hmm. does nothing to help them in a hunt. It's not yeah. a weapon or technology that's going to, you know, give them an advantage in any way. So the paint is just a ritual, a primitive ritual that's symbolic in some way. So I don't know. That's interesting. It was an interesting kind of, yeah, the fact they've had this technology for 100,000 years and still haven't sort of evolved beyond these primitive behaviors, I thought was a really interesting.
It is interesting.
Kind of, and I, and kind
I,
of bad guy.
Yeah, and I like you taking the role of Sherlock Holmes and doing a little bit of detective work here, because you're right. It has persisted for this long, and yeah. it makes sense because the Hirogen are not a species that would consider themselves a social type of species in terms of we're going to trade with people. We're going to you know, establish a relationship with this alien species yeah. and this alien species. These guys are loners. These guys are you know,
hunters,
yeah. but very much living a nomadic and loner lifestyle, right? Yeah. So away from everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's how they like it. So it makes yeah. sense that even after 100,000 years, that these rituals still persist. But then the other question is, maybe 100,000 years ago, it was created by another alien species, and the Hirogen are the ones that sort of just
kind of took it over.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hunted. That's true.
Maybe hunted them out of existence. You know what I'm saying? Maybe this species with the relay network was their favorite yeah. hunt, and they just hunted every single one of them, and they're gone. You know?
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Harry also discovers that the station is using a quantum singularity, a black hole, as a power source. Although it is a tiny one, about a centimeter in diameter, which produces almost 4 terawatts of energy. So a lot of energy for a very tiny black hole, but still it's dangerous. It's something that, you know, you can't just bring any ship close to this, you know, quantum singularity. You're going to be risking things. Most noteworthy is the structural integrity of your ship is going to be something that you're going to be missing if you're too close. Alrighty.
And so they start to get close enough, and then the ship starts shaking, and these gravimetric changes are what's destabilizing the ship, and the ship is really unstable, and we're risking hull integrity and all those things. And Chakotay says, you know what? Back off. We're getting too close. We just got to back off. And so Paris takes him back a little.
Right.
One thing I noticed in this, and it happens throughout the episode quite a bit, is the ship shakes. We used to do ship shakes two ways on the show, right? Either it was like a hit and the cameramen would just shake the camera with their hands. They'd physically shake it. And the other way that we did ship shakes, if they were long sustained, is they would attach a motor to the head of the camera or whatever, just under the lens, or they'd attach it to the camera somehow. And this motor had an offset on it that would sort of vibrate.
That's right.
And they could dial it up or down. So they could kind of dial it up and it would start shaking the camera, and then they dial it down and they could change it, you know, up and down.
Right.
I definitely noticed on these shots that offset motor that they would use to sort of, you know, shake the camera on a long, consistent thing.
Yeah, that motor really gives it a uniform shaking. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's not all jerky and all over the place.
It's not like a crash or a hit.
Yeah. Right.
It's more, you know, ramping up, like, shuddering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I noticed that, and I thought that was thought it was interesting. And then it seemed to track throughout that episode. They kept using that motor.
Yeah.
Which sometimes you could hear it. Do you remember that? Sometimes
I do.
Hear the you could
sort I do of, remember that.
It was a quiet electric motor, but you could hear it, you know, if you're doing a scene that was kind of quiet.
Yeah. That's true. Now in Astrometrics, Janeway heads down there and she realizes as she starts to read little snippets of these data messages that these are really letters from home. These are letters from home. And so it, you know, this kind of excitement starts to gather. So in the next scene, we see Neelix with Janeway. Mm-hmm. Janeway has made Neelix the official mail carrier. They walk outside of Astrometrics into the corridor.
I wish they
outside.
Had made him like a postman's uniform with like the postman's bag. Oh, Neelix could have been a good postman.
See, and that could have been, you could have replicated that 20th century vintage post.
Yes, a vintage.
And handed it to Neelix as a gift, right?
Yeah, but Tom was playing cool with all these letters.
He really
so
was.
So I don't know if he would have gotten it. He would have been like, whatever, Neelix, make your own postman's uniform.
Well, after Neelix walks away, he's happy with his new job. Janeway gets called back into the Astrometrics area with Seven, and Seven says, look, I found a latent data stream. It's buried under the message. It's heavily encrypted. It includes maps. So now we're getting very excited. Like, what maps of way back home?
Yeah. And so it's not just personal messages anymore. Personal. It's real important information we may need from Starfleet. So
correct.
Yep.
Correct. And then there's a nice little character development scene for Seven of Nine when Janeway sort of, you know, are you, you know, how do you feel about all this? And she's like, well, I have no emotional resonance with this because I don't, you know, I've never been to Earth. And then Janeway brings up a very, very possible fact. And that would be, well, you might have family there, cousins, grandparents. So you might have more emotional resonance than you think. So a nice little touching scene there with Seven.
Yeah, I thought it was really great for both of them. It was very well played, very, very nuanced and subtle. And yeah, so far in this episode, by the way, I think everybody's performances are really good. Yeah. Like, and again, I've said it before, but I love episodes where we're all involved, where it's not just one character on an away mission or something. Right. And this is one of those episodes for me where everybody has an interesting everybody's invested. Yeah,
we all got something to do.
Go back to the bridge and Neelix brings the first letters in. And my first thought as he walked onto the bridge to hand off a few letters, I was like, why would he give out these letters at work where people could have horrible news or you know, very emotionally loaded news? And like, why would you just hand them out on the bridge? But
so
this question was answered a moment later because Chakotay looks at it and then he says, I'm going to go read this in private.
Yeah.
And he says, Tom, can you take the bridge?
Yes, he does.
Look at me.
Wait. When he says, I'm going to go read this in private, when he says this is from the person who recruited me to the Maquis, did you think it was something nefarious? Did you think like, uh-oh, like this is some secret code stuff from the Maquis? Because that's what I first thought. I thought this is something like, you know, something dangerous.
When he says that, he didn't say that on the bridge, right? He says that later to... He just says it's from an old friend, I think, on the bridge.
No, he says, this is from a person who recruited me into the Maquis.
He says that on the bridge?
Yes, he does. And then he says, I better go read this in private. And then I was thinking, wow, well, that's interesting. So I thought it was something a little negative, right?
Nefarious. I didn't think that. I got from his performance that it was about personal friendship things and not about any political or Maquis stuff.
Right. And then you get the
bridge. I also wrote that Harry is so sad. He didn't get a letter. Poor Harry.
I wrote down that didn't even sound like my voice. The first part when I say, Neelix, wait a minute, that sounds like me. But the second part, aren't there any more, sounded like voiceover or someone else. It didn't sound like me.
No, it was definitely you, but it could have been looped in. There was a lot of looping in this episode, I noticed.
I think Tony Todd did my line that the second half.
That's probably what he did.
He was like, you know what? You're doing the Hirogen. Why don't you do Harry's line too? And he's like, I'll raise my voice a little higher to do Harry. So now you get the bridge, but yet you don't sit in the captain's chair.
I sit in Chakotay's chair.
Why?
I don't know. I noticed that.
That confused me. I was like, wait a minute.
Confused. Well, I think because Chakotay was...
He gave you the command, so you felt like sitting in his chair?
Yeah, I probably sat in his chair because I was directed to sit in there. Maybe it was for the shot. I might have been blocked by Neelix or whoever was in the foreground there.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to pick the chair like that hasn't been sat in, the one that's not warm. I'd like a cool chair. I don't want a warm
chair. Yeah, that's true. I feel like both of those chairs, though, have the same information.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Like, so they're interchangeable, right?
I think so.
That's fine. Now we jump to Tuvok's quarters, AKA Club Tuvok, although it hasn't looked a lot like Club Tuvok lately. It's just quarters.
No, but he's got a lot going on in those quarters. Always. He's got wall art. He's got plants. He's got He's got a desk with lots of buttons. I didn't have a desk with any buttons in my quarters.
What? Okay, fine. So Club Tuvok is still happening. And he's completing his weekly tactical review. And Neelix is so excited to bring Tuvok his letter. And he keeps saying, well, you're going to read it, right? And then Tuvok's like, yeah, maybe later. I need to complete this. And he's like, you got to be kidding me. You got to read this. And finally, he offers to read it to Tuvok. And we discover that Tuvok is now a grandpa.
Because he says, well, don't you want to read it now? It's really important from your family. And Tuvok turns around, Mr. Neelix, did you read my letter?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, a little bit. I mean, just a little. I just saw.
Just the first few lines. Yeah, that's it. That's so funny.
It was very funny. Mm-hmm. I was actually expecting that famous scene that Ethan Phillips does in Wagons East, where he's taking notes for a letter. And he's trying to remember the whole thing. And I was like, as this moment happened, I was like, what if it was the reverse of that? What if he was like, Tuvok was like, Mr. Neelix, have you read my letter? Well, no, not much. Just the first line, you know. Hello, Tuvok, it's your wife. And then she says, what did she say? And then he could just go on like he memorized the whole letter. And then Tuvok goes,
is that all you read? Well, hello, Tuvok, it's your wife and your kids are good. And he keeps going, what? It's the reverse of Wagons East. Yeah.
That's what I wanted to happen in that
very
moment.
Very funny. Very funny.
I really did.
But it could also work identical parallel to the movie if Tuvok decided to write back, right? And then Neelix is like, do you have a writing utensil? And Tuvok goes like, no, you have to. And he's like, oh, that's fine. And he starts going through the whole thing just like he did in Wagons East.
Oh, I wish we could have. Oh, I wonder if they thought about that. If Ethan had a moment where he was like, you know, oh, this is like that scene. It's a classic. Maybe. It's one of the funniest scenes ever filmed. It's really
it is. Maybe it did cross his mind. Who knows?
I know. Huh. I know.
Okay.
Anyway, he reads it. You're right. And Tuvok is a grandfather.
Yeah.
His son has gone through the Ponfar successfully. And now you're a grandfather.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And Tuvok still seems distracted with work. And Neelix leaves, gives him this news. And Tuvok goes back to work alone for a moment, and then he stops and he looks back at the pad and he puts his work down and he gets the pad and sits down. I thought that was a really sweet moment.
It's a good moment. Yeah.
It was really nice for Tuvok to kind of have this private moment where you see his vulnerability and his sensitivity.
Yeah. There's a lot of vulnerability in this episode. Mm-hmm. What else happens a lot in this episode is Harry says yes ma'am a lot in this one. He's yes ma'am me, left and right.
I know
you did notice
that,
right? And you don't much say more, it so much no, much more I, than Tom.
I may say it once. I
think
feel
you
like
said
you
it
say
one
it
time
four
I said it four times.
Times
at least. Yeah,
at least that's a trademarked line there, by the way.
Wait, yeah. Do I owe you residuals on that now?
Yes. Oh, you do. God. That may or may not be part of my
fine.
My reaction videos.
I'm going to send you $4. I'm going to send you $1 per yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, there's a t-shirt that says yes, ma'am. I mean, how much more trademarks can it be?
So you want retroactive residuals is what you're saying. You want it? Okay.
Every time anyone says yes, ma'am on Voyager, I need $1.
Yeah.
Okay. That's maybe a little high.
Yeah.
So now we go to the bridge, and Janeway has a letter, and she tells Tom to stay on the bridge. She's going to go in a ready room to read a letter, and she goes in and sits down. And we have this very simple and very effective shot that just pushes in on Janeway as she starts to read.
It does show the reverse, though. Did you freeze it and try to read it?
No.
Oh, I totally did. I totally
did.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sure it was nothing.
You can make out the very towards the end. It says, however, I do need to relate some rather difficult news, .. So they actually made it. It's, you know, it looks like it's just a bunch of gibberish, but I made out part of it.
And for everybody to know, on these pads, the prop pads, the little things that they would hand us, they were just made out of wood.
Yeah.
And they had printed graphics on them. And most often it was just generic numbers and symbols and things like that. But every now and then for an insert, they do like what you're describing, Garrett, they'd print something out specific.
Yes.
If we were going to go close on it.
Right.
So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. But I did love this moment because as we push in, she's kind of laughing, you know, she's very happy to read the letter and she just feels so contented and excited to read this. And then you see her stop and you see sort of the news sort of landing on her. And
yeah,
I just thought Kate did a beautiful job of that moment.
Yeah.
And the simplicity that you know, David Levithan shot it with was perfect. It was perfectly matched.
Yeah, the tone of that scene was very effective. Mm-hmm. You clearly could see that something was not right, and the life or the air just kind of leaves the room.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see that difference. Her face just turns dark, and it's a great scene. It really is.
It's a great scene, and something occurs to me, and I could be wrong, but as I'm remembering watching it just now, I don't think there was a lot of music in that scene. I think it was pretty quiet.
Yes.
And that's unusual, because usually if there's not characters talking, our composers and the producers would often just fill it with some kind of score behind there.
Yeah.
And so you would think for a moment like this that you could easily they could have written this swelling music that was very dramatic and whatever.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that they didn't, from my memory, and we just watched it, so I should remember this, but I don't remember any music, or if it was there, it was very minimal, and it just allowed Kate to play this moment very authentically. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Agreed.
And then we go to engineering. And in engineering, we're upstairs again, which, you know, the first thing I thought of is like, boy, David Levithan always had to pick the hardest places to shoot, because you can't get up there easily. Like, you have to, I don't even remember how they got the equipment up there. It was like pulleys or I don't know.
Wait a minute. You're right. I'm just trying to think about that. There was that little elevator, that little kind of
tiny
like
little one person elevator, but it was,
you couldn't fit a dolly on there.
No way.
Dolly on there. No. You wouldn't be able to fit a lot of things on there. So it was very difficult to film on the mezzanine of
the mezzanine level.
Yes.
And as I watched it, I was like, okay, she is going to lose her temper. So you kind of want that to be private, but shooting it upstairs was hard. It just was slower. So that was my first thought as we watched that.
Yeah.
And Chakotay comes up to B'Elanna and he says, remember, was it Sveta?
It's Sveta, like S-V-E-T-A, Sveta.
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 And he says, I have terrible news.
Yeah.
And he tells B'Elanna that the Maquis have been wiped out. That the Cardassians.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm. Cardassians have an ally that they're from the Gamma Quadrant, and they supplied them with weapons and ships. And B'Elanna is just dumbfounded. She's so upset. And her Klingon comes out a bit here, because she vows revenge. And she's really emotional. I thought another good scene.
Yeah.
It's great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole realization that your entire group of friends, you know, your movement, your freedom movement is now nothing. I mean, there's a few people left alive, but they're all in prison. That's it, right? Mm-hmm. It's big news for sure.
It's huge. And it was really well played by both of them. Then we go to the mess hall, I think.
Yeah.
Harry approaches Tom, and you and I have a nice little scene there.
Yeah. I got to say, you are very good at eating on camera. You really are. You are. You're a good on-camera eater, because it's not easy, because, you know, when you're eating and you have lines and you got to time it all properly.
Yeah.
And it's like, once you do coverage, then you got to remember, oh, well, wait a minute. Okay. And the master shot, I stuck this piece of food in my mouth right before I said this line. And now my close up, what do I do? I mean, all this stuff has to be in your head. And you did a good job with the food.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I was impressed.
Yeah, I think I like the concept of this scene, that Harry is really excited and Tom's playing like he could care less. He's talking about the food and, you know, how did you like the chicken? And he's just avoiding. Basically, Tom is pretending like he doesn't care.
Right.
But Harry is really, really excited. And Neelix walks into mess hall with a bunch of letters.
Yeah.
And Harry had told Tom a moment before he heard that there were maybe 30 more letters and feels like this might be his batch.
Yeah.
And the letters get handed out. Nothing for Tom, nothing for Harry.
No.
And Harry goes over to Neelix and says, you know, I heard that there were 30 letters. And Neelix is like, where'd you hear that?
Yeah.
And
those are rumors.
Yeah. He said, well, that's what the word going around. No, that's rumors.
Yeah.
And this last exchange between Tom and Harry, where Tom says, you know, Harry, no hopes, no disappointments.
Yeah.
And Harry says, I'm not you.
I'm not you. Yeah. This is probably the harshest Tom and Harry interchange that we've had to this point in the show. Mm-hmm. They're really, it's always been kind of rainbows and funniness and pulling jokes on each other. And then all of a sudden there's this, you know, Harry's clearly obsessed with getting this letter. Tom is clearly obsessed with avoiding any talk about letters. As actors, we talk about, you know, what's your motivation? And our motivations are diametrically opposite of each other in this scene. Mm-hmm. And it ends in kind of not even a stalemate. It's sort of a dismissive tone that Harry gives to Tom. It's sort of like, you know what? I'm not you. Okay. I got to get out of here.
And I'm not going to go to your, you know, disconnected place. I'm going to stay authentic. And
yes, but I was still shocked that I even kind of put that tone out towards you, mm-hmm. you know, that Harry did that. Cause I don't recall filming that scene and seeing that I was like, ooh, that's a little harsh.
I didn't recall filming that scene either, but I liked it a lot.
It was a great scene.
We're really, really good.
And the way that Livingston chose to shoot that too, you mm-hmm. know, so mm-hmm. it really, having me in the foreground and looking away and you in the back kind of right behind me, but also looking away, you're looking the other direction, you know, kind of eating your food. And it was well done. I liked it.
Yep. Yeah. Agreed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
After this, we go to the ready room and mm-hmm. Seven comes in to talk to Janeway.
Yeah.
And Seven asks, she says she wants to go shore up this containment field, mm-hmm. that it's degrading and we need to get closer. And she's got a way to shore up this containment field so we can keep getting these messages.
Yeah.
And Janeway says, well, I'm not accustomed to sending an away team of one. So take Tuvok with you.
Right.
And Seven agrees and leaves, and you see Janeway for a moment after that, she's still clearly shaken by whatever was in this letter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great, because as an actress, she tracked it, you know, she mm-hmm. realized, okay, I'm still, I got my Dear John letter and I need to keep that same life going inside of me mm-hmm. for every scene mm-hmm. after. And she definitely does. And the whole suggestion of this shuttle was because a smaller craft can handle those gravimetric eddies better than Voyager, right? It's too big. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole reason behind that. Then we jump to Astrometrics, and it's Torres and Harry. Harry comes in. He's expecting to see Seven, doesn't see her. He says, where's Seven? And then, of course, B'Elanna starts teasing Harry about Seven. You know, I can tell you're in love, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And Harry's, you know, he's really just bummed about no letter from home. That's his driving motivation in this scene. And also to just get B'Elanna to stop messing with him. And I love the change that Roxanne throws in there. I mean, Roxanne's just teasing. And when then she realizes what is the reason behind Harry's appearance in the Astrometrics lab. Mm-hmm. And it's all about that letter. She becomes quite empathetic, you know, mm-hmm. and she really just switches her tone entirely, which I thought was great what Roxanne did.
Yeah. Agreed. I thought it was really great. The one thing I thought was really important in the scene that we learned is Harry sort of admits at first, you know, she's an attractive woman. And at first I did think about Seven, you know, as a potential date or whatever, but mm-hmm. there's nothing between us. And he literally says, I'm over that now. I thought it was interesting because the writers wrote it, obviously.
Yeah. You know?
And so he says he's over it. That's all. I thought that was important to sort of hear Harry explain that and literally acknowledge it, you know, the stories that we'd already shot.
So. Right. And it's interesting. Maybe this is the last time that you'll hear of this after there may be no talk after this.
They may have wanted to put that behind him. Yeah. I mean, you know, there is another way to look at it of like, Harry's just covering. Just because he says, oh yeah, I'm over that now.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he really is. People say things all the time that they don't mean. So
that's true.
That's true. But I think I felt like your performance of this in the context of everything, it felt like an authentic, he believed he was over it at this point.
Okay.
You know, I thought that was good.
Yeah.
We cut inside the shuttle. Seven asked Tuvok, are Vulcans capable of telling lies?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a fun exploration between these two, you know, brainiacs here. Well, and he goes, yes, but only under certain conditions.
Yeah.
You know,
what a roundabout way of getting to the point, right? Are Vulcans liars or not? I mean, just like, just get to the point, Seven. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because now she's becoming
more very human.
Very gradually, but she is becoming more human and less Borg. The Borg in her would say immediately, is it Starfleet protocol for one person to be assigned another person on an away mission? Is it always a two-person minimum? That would have been the, you know, the Borg Seven chatting to Tuvok. But of course, now that her humanity is reasserting itself, now she's worried about Janeway and what she thinks of her, right?
Yeah. They get close to this relay station.
Yes.
And they emit a polaron pulse to prevent further degradation. That seems to be successful. And then suddenly there's this big light. And they're like, what was that? They say they were scanned by a subnucleonic beam. They have lost communication. They've lost engine. They've lost weapons. And there's a ship approaching.
And navigation.
And navigation.
I want to rewind for a second.
All of that stuff, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Rewind for just a quick second. Mm-hmm. Do you recall in the ready room when Seven approached Janeway saying, I need to go on a shuttle to get closer? Janeway assigned Chakotay for that away mission. But yet, that's clearly not Chakotay in the shuttle. So I don't know if you made that.
That's what I thought too. And then I rewound it and she said Tuvok. Why did you and I both think that she assigned Chakotay? She didn't.
What?
Because I wrote it down.
You rewound it later, back to what scene in the ready room?
Yeah, when Tuvok was in, I was like, wait, I wrote down Chakotay. And I looked and I wrote it down. And I was like, wait a minute, let me go back. Did I mishear this? And I did. She said Tuvok. You and I both thought she assigned Chakotay, but she didn't. That's weird.
We are experiencing the same glitch in the Matrix. You and I are the same Matrix right now. I heard Chakotay 1,000%. I wrote that down. I said, why did Janeway assign Chakotay for the away mission? But then Tuvok is inside the shuttle. And you rewound it back to the ready room scene.
Says
Tuvok?
She says Tuvok. But I literally had to go delete and retype Tuvok because I had already typed Chakotay in there. That's weird that we both heard that.
Wow. Yeah. We're on the same page.
That's crazy.
With our errors, we're on the same page. Okay. That's really weird. All right. So now they're back in the shuttle interior. The shields are weakening. They're maneuvering towards the relay station because Tuvok thinks that the larger vessel will be affected by the gravimetric forces. This might be their way of getting away from them. Mm-hmm. But then a tractor beam hits them and Tuvok quickly launches a distress beacon. And then the tractor beam all of a sudden emits another beam of red light, which then causes them to lose unconsciousness. What was that? We don't even know what that was.
I call it the sleeping beam. That's the sleeping beam.
Sleep beam.
Sleep beam them. I got to go back for two things.
Yeah, go.
So during this attack, we just heard Seven say, we've lost communication.
That's right.
We've lost navigation. We've lost engines. We've lost weapons.
Yeah.
But yet they keep pushing all these buttons. And when we cut to space, the shuttle is flying closer. So did they, I don't know. Like she said, we got nothing, but clearly they had something because the shuttle's
maybe it was on autopilot and the autopilot and navigation
just continued
left
to float. And they just, I don't know.
You know, an object in motion stays in motion if you're talking about physics, right? So they kept going.
But then they say, let's get closer.
Yeah, there's a little hole in the script here. Yes,
there's that, and here's the other thing. During the battle, when they're first fighting this ship that's approached, David Livingston went to these low angles, and two things I thought is, wow, when you get low like that, you need the star field, because what we would do is we would film with stars on a solid black like velvet
cloth.
Curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah. There would be little reflective stars on a black velvet curtain that would hang inside the windows. But if you got too low, you'd look up to the ceiling of the soundstage.
You would see the top of it.
So I was looking at this low angle. And I'm thinking, how did they get the star field up? That would have been complicated. And the second thing, more importantly, was I was like, oh, from this low angle, you see these cool reflections in the window
of the console. Yeah. Of the console. And I like that, actually.
Well, I liked it too, until I went, wait a minute. There are no windows in ships. It's a force field, and force fields don't reflect like glass. Like you wouldn't have a reflection of anything because it's just a force field.
Yeah.
A reflection would have to be a solid surface that have some reflective qualities of light. A force field would not have that. At first I was like, oh, that's cool. They're reflections of the consoles. Wait a minute. There aren't reflections in space windows.
Yeah, but there has to be some. I mean, you're not going to manufacture a shuttle with no type of plexiglass of window. You know, it's super cool,
believe me. But and I've literally, I got to be honest, we're 4.5 seasons into the show. I've never thought of it before.
Okay,
but there should not be reflections on force fields.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but I also feel that there is some type of window there, and then there's shields on top of that that go over everything.
All right. Because
I don't see that thing coming off the assembly line with just this windowless gap, which is, oh, of course, when your shields are on, it'll just cover it, you know, because if you lose shields, you're still going to have some type of protection from the exterior of space. Right.
This is a good debate. Would
Andre Bormanis know the answer to this?
Andre Bormanis would know.
Okay.
Or Mike and Denise might know this.
Or Mike and Denise would know this.
Because they know all the ships, you know, and how they're built.
One of our listeners should probably also know this too.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Are there, scientifically, would there be reflections in the windows of a Starfleet vessel?
Correct.
I'm gonna go with a no. Technically, there should not be reflections.
Okay.
But it was a cool shot from David Livingston.
This isn't the first time this has happened. There's been reflections of people in the windows from the mess hall too.
Yeah.
So I've seen that. So yeah. All right.
Okay. So, and how are they flying? Cause they just lost everything. And now all of a sudden they fly. Anyway.
Yeah.
I had a couple issues in that moment.
But
after the sleep beam, which I think is cool. I wish Starfleet would come up with their sleep beam. We could avoid all this violence and destruction. If we could just like send over a little sleep beam, put them into a nap. Everybody just take a little nap and we'll feel better.
So now that makes me feel like instead of saying set phasers to stun, you're going to say set phasers to sleep.
To sleep. Yeah. Just nap it off. Sleep it off.
Yeah.
We go to the bridge and there's a comm call. Torres says she has some letters and she asks for Tom to come down. And he goes to Astrometrics.
Yep.
And he makes a joke at first. I think he knows the letter is probably coming. He makes a joke and he says, maybe it's, you know, rehab sending a message that I violated probation. And she doesn't really laugh.
Yeah.
He just wants to go back to work. And she says, I think this is for you. It's from an Admiral Owen. Do you know him? And I'm like, oh, yeah. That's my dad.
That's my pappy.
I loved when Para says here, you know, the more everybody gets excited, the more I don't want to be any part of it because this is better than anything I ever had back there.
Yeah.
I love that line. I thought it was super cool.
So much vulnerability in this scene. It really is.
Tons
really
of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Torres says, give him a chance. And Tom says, it's not going to matter when he's made up his mind.
Right.
And then she reveals, well, you know, you're feeling sorry for yourself and all my friends are dead. And I was first mad and sad. And I'm trying to accept all this.
Yeah.
And
no idea about. You didn't know anything about this.
No. And Tom goes over to hug her.
Yeah.
It's a very sweet scene. I did notice, I have to say, Rebecca actually pointed this out, that Roxanne's forehead makeup is very white compared to the rest of her face. And it just didn't seem to match. In a few of the moments, it was just like, whoa, that forehead makeup piece is just not matching color-wise anything on her face. So
good catch by Rebecca. I also caught, my catch was when you guys hug in this scene, if you look at Roxanne's fingers, some of the makeup that they put on her hand has worn off of her fingers.
Actually. Oh, really?
Yeah. So she has a darker part of her hand and a lighter part of her hand. I said, they didn't catch that one. And then earlier, I'm going to rewind back into that shuttle scene with Seven and Tuvok. Did you see there is some type of discoloration right over Seven's eyebrow implant where it's darker as if someone punched her there, like it was bruised. And I was like, what is going on? So there's a couple of catches on makeup that I noticed. I did not catch. Yeah, I didn't catch the whiteness of the forehead, but I caught
very different above the eyebrows, the color
than palette, below, right?
Than below. It was a much darker change down below.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very sweet scene. I really loved what Roxanne did in this scene. I was very happy with what I did, and I love what they wrote. So
yeah,
I thought that was a really great scene.
A really good scene for both characters, for sure. Yeah.
We go to the ready room. Chakotay tells the captain that it looks like Tuvok and Seven succeeded, that the field is stable and the letters should be coming in much more easily. Mm-hmm. And he kind of casually says, you know, we don't have the shuttle on sensors yet, but they should be back soon. And I was like, dude, you don't have the shuttle on sensors? You've lost the shuttle? Like, shouldn't that be a red alert?
Yeah. They're just like, they're not that far away.
On the letters. Dude, you've lost the shuttle. I was like, okay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But then he brings up Mark's letter. And
yeah,
even though
our shuttle is lost, let's talk about the letters.
Talk about what's important.
Yes.
Mark's letter.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. I love what Jerry Taylor wrote when Chakotay, actually, Janeway says he married his coworker 4 months ago. And then Chakotay says, well, how do you feel about that? And she pauses and she says, well, I knew he would eventually move on with his life, but there was such a finality to that letter. That line right there was such a finality to that letter was really impactful, I felt. I was like, wow, this is quite poetic and moving at the same time. And that's when Harry interrupts with the call to Janeway, come to the bridge. We got some issues. And Harry has picked up the distress signal from Tuvok's shuttle, and sensors show that there is no one on board the shuttle.
Yeah.
Zippo,
maybe Chakotay should have been thinking about that when he said, we don't have the shuttle and sensors. Instead of talking about the letters, maybe he should have focused on that.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, now we go to the ship. And now we see in the net.
Yeah, which
looks, I kept thinking we saw those earlier, but
well,
no,
what is the now, okay? No, but what have you? Where have you seen something similar to that though, Robbie, in filmed entertainment? What would you say?
I don't know.
Predator. Did you watch Predator?
Oh
the movie?
Yeah, Predator. Yeah,
Predator. Sure. The interior of the Predator ship. Same thing. The netting. You know, bone vertebrae. Bones. Yeah, skull. And it was very imposing until it showed that one. Scalp. Do you see that one little fluff of hair that was kind of hanging from the thing? And I said, oh, that's too Halloween costumey wig-wise. That pulled me out a little bit. But the rest of the bones made me feel quite creepy, quite eerie, quite like, ooh, these guys mean business, right? Mm-hmm. They're not playing around at all. So,
and Seven and Tuvok are on the floor tied up, they're restrained, and the Hirogen arrive.
Yeah.
And he was disappointed in the hunt, he said. There wasn't much of a fight, and he wants information. Why did you violate our property? And they say, just, you know, we're trying to get some communication from home, and just let us grab that and we'll go.
Yeah.
And he said, nope, I took you in a fair hunt. I claim you, he said. Mm-hmm. I hope the others are stronger, he says. Mm-hmm. They'll make a better fight.
Didn't he paint stuff on them in this scene? Does he paint something
he
on
did.
Them?
Yeah, he
that's
put
right.
Some, that's when
that shows how he claims them. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm guessing maybe white or silver is his color, right? Like they all each Hirogen like has that. A hue, you know, that they have, right?
Yeah, maybe something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We do find out in the scene that a couple Hirogen ships are approaching.
Yeah.
But he's focused on this Hirogen, Idrin, I guess is his name.
Yes.
He's like, no, this is the first of their kind, and I will be envied by everyone.
Yes.
I'm not sharing this prey.
Right.
And he wants to collect the relics from them. This is the torture and the skinning and all that stuff that he wants to do.
Yeah.
Kind of gross.
It's definitely probably the most, well, other than, you know what? No, I would have to say the Hirogen are not the most scary, eerie people. The first were really the... Vidians. The Vidians were the creepiest people.
Vidians were super creepy.
Super
I love
creepy.
The Vidians. But these guys are just like battle ready.
And yeah, that's true. Where the Vidians were, you know, a very advanced culture, you know, that had to deal with this phage. They weren't really about going out and you know, gutting people. That's not their MO. But these guys, the Hirogen, it's very primal, like you said, 100,000 years worth of primal urges that they just keep acting on, right? Yeah, very, very creepy in their own right. Yep. Okay, so Janeway tries to bargain. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we go to the bridge. Captain says, return our people. She tries to bargain. He basically says, you just better run. Like, I'm not giving your people back. Yeah. You better get out of here.
Three more ships are coming. When my people show up, you guys are toast. So I'm giving you a chance to save yourself, but I'm not giving you back your two. These are my relics or these are my, I've claimed these two for myself. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then we stay on the Hirogen ship here and the two Hirogen start to argue a bit. They're arguing over the relics and we see some of these tools that they're going to use. And we end this scene with them preparing to, I guess, you know,
dissect
seven.
Yeah.
And he says, I think his last line is something like, their bone structure will make cutting through the back very difficult.
This will take time.
Yes.
which means it's going to be slow and painful is what it's going to be. Right. I kept thinking, do they get any type of, you know, anesthesia? Do you think do you think they even offer that to their people?
No, I don't think so.
No, they just cut it into you. Yeah. Okay.
We go back to the bridge. They're preparing for battle.
She's strategizing. Yeah. What are we going to do?
We realize that they have massive weapons that were outgunned. She says an anti-thoron burst with a low-level warp field may draw them in or, you know, change the gravitational pull in some way.
I literally wrote down effects.
I don't get science is what I wrote. Like, really?
Okay, so what they're saying is the relay station has its own containment field, which keeps the singularity in check, right? So if you don't have a containment field, the singularity will now suck in everything that's close by and completely just make everything disappear, right? So she's saying, how can we boost the effects of the singularity? How can we make it stronger to attract in these ships that are coming towards us? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, how do we protect Voyager from getting sucked in? So the low-level warp field created around Voyager is to keep it sort of, you know, protected from the singularity. That Thoron burst is the sort was, I think Harry recommended it. If we throw that Thoron burst, it'll weaken the containment field, which will make the singularity or the black hole stronger to suck in the Hirogen vessels. Okay. Exactly. Right. Is science better now?
Sure. Yeah. Science is better. I still don't get science, but sure.
And I also wrote Harry, yes, ma'am's Janeway about finding the right balance to beam. Yes.
Again, he, yes, ma'am.
Well, it just shows you that you rub off on me, right? Exactly. So that's it. Exactly. You're my buddy. And how you speak, I start to, yes, ma'am. And yes, ma'am. I noticed that there's a couple that I did do an extra zhuzh.
A little extra Tom Parrish zhuzh
too. So, so Janeway's like, hey, you need to find the right balance to be able to beam. Cause the concern is this, if we create this low level warp field around Voyager, it may be too high to beam Tuvok and Seven back. Mm-hmm. And that's when Janeway looks at Harry and says, well, you better find the right balance. And that's when I go, yes, ma'am, to right back. So there you go. Okay.
We cut over to the Hirogen ship. Tuvok is in a bit of a fight with the Hirogen guys. He's got some nice moves over there with the.
He slices his neck, but it does nothing to him. It does nothing.
The guy keeps fighting.
It's just.
And then somebody picks Tuvok up. And I wondered.
Same guy.
I wondered if they put some a wire on Tuvok because he was up in the air kind of sideways and then gets thrown.
Yeah, that was tight. That was Tiny. Tiny was the one that was holding the taxidermy tool, whatever you want to call it, the scalpel. And then that's what Tuvok grabs it from him, slices him, and then goes to try to stab Beta Hirogen, who's working on the console there.
The other,
And that's when Tiny grabs Tuvok. And you're right, there has to be some type of
Yeah.
Do you think he would have had enough power to pick up Tim like that and throw him on his own? No way, right?
No way.
So there's a harness. There's a wire and a harness that's underneath his uniform. And what they would do is they would cut a little hole in the uniform to kind of thread that wire through. Mm-hmm. And then on command,
they would lift him up.
Lift him up and just jerk him, move him around anywhere they want him. Right. With that harness and the wire.
Yeah. I think Tim got to do a little wire work on that. Cause that was Tim floating up in the air. And then the toss probably went to a stunt double, you know, jumping off a platform into the wall or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. But it was cool. Then we cut back and B'Elanna is saying she's gotten as much as she thinks she's going to get.
Right.
The battle ensues. There are sparks on the bridge that I think were the biggest sparks I'd ever seen on our bridge. I thought that was pretty cool.
And Janeway did warn them. Janeway warned those guys. She said, stop firing on us. If you do that, that containment field is going to be gone. And they don't listen. And of course, one by one, they're all sucked into the
relay
hole.
Station gets sucked in. The gravity well of the black hole just sucks them all in. I thought Chakotay's line, he said, we're losing this tug of war. That sounds like a Tom line. Like Tom's the one that always
he's the one
science
that
and makes it like something any idiot can understand.
We're losing this tug of war.
We're losing this tug of war. That sounds like a Tom line, but Chakotay said it. Whatever.
Yeah. It's they're fine. Mixing up lines. They're giving me the yes ma'ams. They're giving
Everybody's talking like the tug of war. Wrong person.
We're talking like the wrong person.
Now, so those guys all got sucked in. Voyager's now getting sucked in.
I know.
And it's looking bad, right?
Yeah.
And then suddenly Janeway says, open the antimatter injectors to 120%.
Right. That was the final command. Everything else was like, reroute life support. That's not working. Reroute this. That's not working. Yeah. Antimatter
and then
injectors.
Open the antimatter injectors 120%.
Yeah.
And Harry says something like, we could have a warp core
breach.
Breach. And we do it anyway. And that fixes it. And I'm like, I really don't get science now. Oh, antimatter ejectors just to 120. No, not 125, not 119.
No,
120 is just right. I can figure that out in my little brain science.
I think I threw another yes man too.
It seemed a little easy. I think you did. You were like spouting off the
yes ma'am and left and right. Oh my goodness. But that saves the day, right?
Saves the day because Janeway knows the exact percentage of antimatter injectors that will fix a giant black hole that no one else seemed to be able to defend themselves.
Clearly, Janeway has run tons of simulations about being sucked into a 1 centimeter black hole.
I guess
120%. That's what
she knew that off the top of her head and
she did.
Made the call. And anyway, I still don't understand science. Astrometrics. B'Elanna says she's got everything. She delivers Harry his letters.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And also she says that Harry should work on the decoding of the encrypted Starfleet message. And that's when she leaves to deliver a personal message to Harry. And Harry is so happy that he got this message. But I kept thinking he's not having any, like nothing is registering about Libby. Like, why isn't he going like, oh, is it from Libby or it's from my parents. Like he's probably expecting a message from his fiance as well, but there's no mention of her whatsoever in this.
No, not at all in this episode. Nope.
And then she goes down to your station. She
goes down to Tom and she says.
And you don't get your message.
She says, Tom, I'm sorry, your letter didn't make it. But she says, I'm going to choose to believe that he's proud of you and that he misses you.
Yeah.
And Paris takes a pause and goes, so will I. I will too.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty, it's a nice moment because you see like his negativity, his pessimism, his sarcasm that is even, you know, played out has softened over the years on Voyager.
Yeah.
But this is a moment where with B'Elanna and that relationship, you see him grow and change and learn to be positive and look on the brighter side or the more positive side of life.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that moment. It's a very important character moment and relationship for those two.
Yeah.
We go into, Janeway's quarters and Tuvok is talking about the Hirogen and downloading to her. They have no moral center, he says.
Yes. And before you get to that, let's also make mention there is an exterior space shot and it's the captain's log supplemental. And she says, she starts talking, but the last part of her line, which then leads into the shot of Tuvok walking in, is
I've been eager to hear Tuvok's impressions of the species who took them hostage. And the first thing I thought of was Tuvok coming in going,
coming in to do impressions.
So, Captain, they spoke like this.
He starts doing the impression of the Rogen,
which is my first thought. But of course, that wasn't it. Yeah, that would have been very funny.
That would be in the comedy version.
That's the Lower Decks version of it, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Continue.
Tuvok says these guys are really badasses. They're extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. They have no moral center.
No morals.
At all. And then Tuvok leaves and Chakotay comes in and she offers him some coffee. And he says, she goes, cream and sugar? He goes, two sugars. And she's like, oh, two sugars.
Two sugars.
And he says, you drink a lot of that coffee. You've had three or four today. I think four.
Well,
he says
you've been drinking too much is what he says.
Too much.
You've been drinking too much. Like three. She's like, no, four. So yeah.
I love her line. She says coffee, the finest organic suspension ever devised. It got me through the worst of the last 3 years. I beat the Borg with it. She says, I want to make a coffee mug that says,
I beat the Borg with this. Yeah.
Yes.
This coffee.
This mug can beat the Borg or something.
All right. Yeah, we'll work it out. I think streamline that message. That would be funny.
The Borg with coffee.
But all those coffee shippers out there were pretty happy to hear these lines come out of Janeway, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Janeway says she's worried about the crew morale and that Neelix is throwing everybody a party.
Yeah.
And then she does confide in Chakotay. She says that she got a Dear John letter. As hard as it is, she said, I feel like, I was using it as a safety net. I don't have a safety net anymore. And
let's be precise. She said, I used Mark as a safety net to avoid becoming involved with someone else.
Yep.
Okay.
Clearly. And then what does he say? He says, You don't have that safety net anymore.
And I'm waiting for them to kiss, but it doesn't
happen. I was too, but was then like, they get up to go to the party.
He gives her arm to her.
Arm in arm. Come on, people. What are they saying? They're saying no safety net. You don't have one. I got to meet other people.
Yes.
Let's go arm in arm to the party. Come on.
I know. What a tease. It's sort of like we're going to end the episode with this one scene and every JC shipper will watch this going.
I know. I'm with the JCs all the way.
Yeah.
I am totally with them.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What would you rate this on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm gonna say 6.5 is what I'm gonna give this
one. We're very different on this.
Uh-oh. Where are you?
9.
What?
9?
No.
Out of 10.
Why?
9 Why? Out of 10.
Why?
This is a good episode.
Really?
I think this is good because it involves absolutely everybody in the show, the entire cast.
Okay.
There is such an emotional foundation to this with all of the characters from Chakotay and the Maquis and B'Elanna and the Maquis to Janeway and Mark to the Chakotay-Janeway relationship to Harry's relationship with his family, his optimism. I don't know.
Okay.
You
know what?
Every relationship, bang, 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 bang.
Okay. Now that I'm thinking about all the vulnerability that has been displayed, which we haven't really seen until now, I need to shoot that up. I'm going to go to 7.5. So I'm going to add 1 point to it because of the amount of vulnerability. Okay.
Okay.
I'll go with that one.
I think this was one of my favorite episodes. The Hirogen are badasses. Like, they're scary. I think it's cool that we found somebody like them in the Delta Quadrant. I think the makeup is phenomenal.
Okay.
You know, those shots of Seven and Tuvok standing with these giant creatures who are so intimidating. Mm-hmm. Cause Tim Russ is tall. He's taller than me. I'm over 6 feet. Tim's taller than me, but he was looking up to the Hirogen. And so was Seven. Yeah. And I found everything about the concept, and I thought the visual effects were great. I give this a 9 out of 10.
Wow. That's a high rating. I'm shocked. I'm not surprised, but I'm shocked.
I feel like this season to me is the best season we've had so far.
Oh, by far.
And a lot of it has to do with, you know, the 7 of 9
by far
shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not just that. It's
we're getting our legs underneath us. You
performances
know?
Are so good.
They
Writing
are.
Is so good. The effects is so good. We've had a lot of great episodes. I give it a solid 9 out of 10 for me.
What about a lesson then?
The theme for me was life goes on.
Oh,
that
nice.
Things are always changing. Things that are around us are changing. Things that we see are changing, and things that we don't see are changing as well.
Hmm.
Change is the theme.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. Mine is a little bit more dead on. It is don't use other species technology without permission. That's all.
That's fair. That's fair. They told us don't do it, and we did it anyway.
And we didn't even do it. Well, you know what happened? 7 shocked that guy, right? So we didn't even get a chance to negotiate with him, really. So, you need to ask permission before using people's things. So,
agreed.
Yeah, that's all.
That was fun.
All right. Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed this episode as well.
What is next week?
Next week is Prey, which sounds like a continuation of
like
Hunters, doesn't it?
Another Herojin.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Bye, everybody.